Hello and welcome to the Vorthos cast. I'm Lorelei Weissel-Labrizzi.
I'm Brian Dawes.
And I am still Chris Delano.
Allegedly.
You can't prove I'm not.
I believe the burden of proof is on you to prove that you are.
Nope. Chris, until proven otherwise.
Oh,
that's
okay.
How that works.
Great. Well, then we can move on. No real news this week, although... We got last week
because I was so embarrassed.
Like immediately after recorded, we got information that there was not going to be a Planeswalker's Guide or a bigger Legends of article. We did get one that covers Oko's Gang specifically, and then the four face cards for the Commander deck. But that's kind of it for Thunder Junction, which I'm pretty sad about. I think the world is very cool, and I think this world specifically could have really benefited from having the World Guide. Or not the World Guide, the Planeswalker's Guide, which is usually adapted from the World Guide. It's a whole thing. But so unfortunately, I know things about Thunder Junction that I can't talk about because of NDAs that... I think it would be helpful for people to know, and I hope some of that information gets to get disseminated in some way at some point.
We had Roy on Twitter doling out
answering
a little
some
bit of information.
Questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. But... Roy was answering questions. Thank you, Roy, for that. Some of the things I didn't know where Oracle was from, but we'll talk about that in a sec because it's Flavor Gems week. We are looking at flavor gems of Allos of Thunder Junction, Allos of Thunder Junction Commander, and the big score. I think we're mostly just letting the what's the crimes sheet? What is that
the
called?
Prosperities post.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's cool that they're all formatted as the prosperity post with you know, the card name as a headline and the flavor text is like a subheading type thing. Like, it's cool. They're cute, but they're all reprints and they all just depict crimes happening on Thunder Junction. There's no story stuff there. There's no like super expansive world building there. They're just kind of small, fun, and occasionally goofy cards.
There's a lot of them. Every Magic release now seems to include so many cards.
This one was specific. This Thunder Junction literally had an entire other set shoved into the list section of the booster packs, because everyone hated Aftermath. So the big score was supposed to be an Aftermath like set. It came out in like a month ish, but instead it came out with the rest of the set. It got trimmed and released and is part of these boosters. Anyway, well, let's just get to the cards, and we're going to start by talking about Legends, of which there are about 10 million. We're not going to cover all of them, and we're not going to cover a bunch in depth. Where I wanted to start with was Oko's Gang of 13. So these are the characters we followed in the main set story. You know, a few of the folks are more prominent in the story than the others, but all of them are there. And they are Oko the Ringleader, Vraska the Silencer, Malcolm the Eyes, Breaches the Blastmaster, Rakdos the Muscle, Tiny Bones the Pickpocket, Geesa the Hellraiser, Garof. He's the one I always forget to also say the hard G on. Garof the Fleshrite, Ariette the Beguiler, Satoru the Infiltrator, Karvek the Punisher, Annie Flash the Veteran, and Kellen the Kid. One of the things we wanted to do with this set is, the character name, comma, the, and their job in the gang was the card naming construction we ended up going with for Oko's Gang. So, I think there's one or two other legends of this in the set that use a similar naming construction that are not part of the gang, But in a set with, I think, something like actually 44 legends or something, these 13 specifically have this naming convention to set them apart and identify them as members of Oko Gang. Sorry for anyone who thought Magda, the Horde Master, was here. She's not part of the gang. She's, I think, like the only real legend that. Yeah.
Well, so we know so, that Horde Master isn't a job, just like Landlord isn't a job. It's, you're not actually doing any work.
To be fair, Kid is also not a job.
And try telling that to like, a kid. It's hard work. It's hard being a kid. Okay.
In some ways. It's hard being Oko's kid, that's for sure.
That's true.
And so kind of, I don't want to go like too much into these characters, because we've talked about them a bunch during our story summary episodes, which if you haven't listened to yet, they're all the ones that precede this episode. The last like four or five?
Five,
I don't remember how
six,
many we did.
800.
It's not 800. Know. We're not at episode 800 yet. I wrote creative text on the set, so I just wanted to share like that fun little detail that you may not have noticed, but the gang all has this like naming convention that denotes them as part of the gang, which I thought was very cool. It's one of the cool places we get to do something with legendary character card names and epithets that helps, you know, leverage storytelling and stuff.
Yeah, we do want to talk about a few of the individual cards, though, just because some of them are very neat. Brian, do you want to talk about Rakdos?
Basically, Rakdos being the muscle is obvious, just being a billion feet tall demon is very beneficial when you're supposed to be the strong man of the group. He's able to go head to head with Akul, and it's in the story, and it's great. And just want to reemphasize that the legend guide for the set basically backs up my point that Rakdos is just out here living his best life. So
my favorite thing about Rakdos's card is that he's a demon mercenary. Like, yeah, he's the guild leader of, you know, a major guild on Ravnica, but also like you can pay him enough money, he'll show up and do a job. You know, he's a real worker. I mean, like that about him.
Realistically, in the story, he wasn't even there for money. He was just there to be entertained. So
that is true. I wanted to mention one of the things I really love about getting returning legends in a set is that we do get, like we mentioned, cards for Garolf and Geesa, or Geesa and Garolf, depending on which sibling you ask. And they have always kind of had like these like mirror cards to each other. When they were first given cards in a commander and the commander decks, they were in different decks, but they were, you know, blue and black, and they both made zombies. And then we got combined cards for them, and then we got separate cards for them again. And now we have two separate cards, and they're blue and black, as you expect. But the thing I thought was really interesting is that Garolf and Geesa, instead of being sharing a card, they share a token. They both make blue, black zombie rogue creature tokens, which I just love that they're blue and black tokens, even though, you know, Geesa's black, but she makes blue black tokens. Garolf is blue, but he makes blue black tokens. It's cute. It lets the players who don't know anything about the story see these two cards and think, oh, they're probably related. And they are, like, literally.
It's true. They're siblings. God, yeah. I need somebody who can do animation to do the Brian David Gilbert siblings video, but with Geesa and Garolf. I need this. Someone, please, please, please. I don't have the years necessary to construct these skills in order to make this one little meme joke. Ah. Yeah, that's kind of all I have to say about any of Oko's gang. Again, we talked about them in previous episodes. But there are a lot of other returning characters. So there's, again, like 44 legends or something in the set. And most of them are returning characters, but there's still a ton of new characters. And if you're not familiar with all the returning characters, it's hard to tell who's new and who's returning. So I just wanted to like quickly go through the returning legends and say like, hey, where are they from? What's their deal? And yeah. So Fibblethip, Lost in the Range. Fibblethip is a homunculus from Ravnica. From the card Totally Lost, has become a huge meme character in Magic. Much beloved. Is now more lost than he's ever been in his life before. Magda is from Kaldheim. She likes gold because she's a Kaldheim dwarf. And did a bunch of stuff with dragons there and is hanging out with dragons here too. Lazav, Familiar Stranger. He is the guildmaster of the Dimir on Ravnica and has faked his own death and is now traipsing about on a different plane, getting up to his little criminal shenanigans. Vile Smasher, Gleeful Grenadier. She is a goblin from Tarkir, a member of the Kolaghan. Vile Smasher named such because she has a penchant for throwing explosive vials of dragon fire. And she's still just hucking grenades here on Tarkir as on Thunder Junction as well. she got a card in the partner commander decks, which was like a billion years ago at this point.
2016, I think.
Yeah. Jolene, Plundering Pugilist. Jolene is from Nuka Penna. She was a member of the Riveteers, and she is here continuing to punch people and steal things. She has her kind of mechanical through line is treasure. Savala, Eager Trailblazer. She is an elf from Fiora, which is kind of the Renaissance Italy plane, the plane where the conspiracy sets are from. Savala is a loves nature and the wilderness and believe that Pollyanno, the high city, was doing bad things to nature. And now she's here in a world that is like mostly nature, and is having a good time. Cumble, Profiteering Mayor, was the Consul of Allocation, I believe, on Kaladesh in Girapur. He was one of the really corrupt government officials in that set, in cahoots with Tezzeret, and he is here doing the same things for the Sterling Company.
Once a corrupt politician, always a corrupt politician.
Yep. So he is currently the mayor of Prosperity and works with the Sterling Company and is
making the rules that favor him at all times.
Yeah, he's and getting paid for it handsomely. Crown, Violent Cacophony. Crown is a scob made by Ludovic, who is the kind of Dr. Frankenstein character on Innistrad, and Garolf's mentor. And so Crown has been sent to keep watch over Garolf, because that's the closest thing you get to professionalism on Innistrad, I guess, is a zombie watches you and makes sure you're okay. Honest Rutstein. Old Rutstein is a con man, snake oil sales guy from Innistrad. Hey,
he is a legitimate businessman.
No.
More legitimate than Krenko.
Fair.
He will legitimately sell you things for money. But the things he's selling you aren't necessarily what you want or work. And so he has just taken his con artistry business here to Thunder Junction. The Gitrog, Ravenous Ride. The Gitrog monster is a big weird frog who was the center of a cult on Innistrad. And then got corrupted by Emrakul a little bit, and then got better when she went in the moon, and is now here. Oh, and fought Phyrexians as a mount for Thalia.
Finally threw Thalia off and then is running rampant like a wild stallion across the plain of Thunder Junction.
Bruce Tarl is here, roving rancher. Bruise is a flavor text character, fan favorite flavor text character from Zendikar, who he's a nomad with the Goma Fada caravan. His flavor text is largely he hates the oxen he had to herd there. But here on Thunder Junction, he has found a whole bunch of oxen that listen to him, and he's finally like, you know, buried the hatchet, and is a rancher. Marquesa, Dealer of Death, is the former, maybe still, she was Queen of Paliano. She murdered the king and took his throne, and then fought Phyrexians, and now she's here doing crimes. She's an assassin by trade. When I say killed the king, I mean, like, scheming assassin killed the king and took his throne. Obeka, Splitter of Seconds, is an ogre who punches things and shatters time. She isn't really from story. We don't know where she's from. But she actually has her magic story debut in this set in a side story with Nashi, which is sweet. But we did see her in Commander Legends with a very unique card. And she gets another weird, unique turn mechanic here. Gearhead Mirror of the Wilds is from Ravnica. He was Selesnya, but found them too rigid. And then he became Gruul and found them too feral. He had a commander deck card a couple of years ago that was Naya, and is now on Thunder Junction, living his best life the way he sees fit. Riku of Many Paths. Riku is from Chandelar. His card was from the very first commander decks 13 years ago. And this is now his second card, so he constitutes deep cut. This is like Time Spiral referencing cards from Alpha, by the way.
I feel so Riku's, old. I have just Riku's, turned to dust.
Yeah. Riku's thing is that he made like a twin version of himself to study different kinds of magic. This card ups the ante a little bit more, and now he has three different abilities and plays with modal spells. Olivia from Innistrad, her wedding got ruined, and now she is here being pouty about it and being like, hey, there's no pesky planeswalker twerps to stop me from doing horrible things, so I have my big fancy Southern Belle gown and am gonna get a bunch of money and control people and revel in power for the taking. And then we have Gonti, Canny Inquisitor, who is from Kaladesh. They're an Aetherborn. They ran a bunch of black market stuff, but also supported the rebellion, which is good, Gearpore. And they're here in like an official capacity to expand trade from Gearpore to Thunder Junction, although is still doing black market stuff on the side to make a bunch of money for themselves.
As you do.
That's the returning characters. Brian, you had mentioned your name's next to the Gitrog on our agenda. Was there more you wanted to say about the Gitrog?
Nope, that was it.
I have things to say about the Gitrog. I have things to say about this whole list. So when Thunder Junction was being revealed, when we were all seeing it, there's a lot of conversation about, first of all, like how many legendary characters there are. But like, honestly, this is whatever. Who cares? You know, have a set that's 100 legendary characters, have a set that has zero. But my big problem was not that people were like, oh, we're shoving a bunch of characters into this setting with no explanation. And I'm like, okay, but some of these characters make a lot of sense, right? Like, imagine you've just been through a horrible, horrible war, and then a portal opens where you can go to the Wild West. You know, like, first of all, there are a lot of problems with the term Wild West, but you know what I mean. Like, you can go into this, like, fantasy world where you get to ride horses. Sounds great. A lot of these characters make some sense there. Some of them, though, I have to agree, what are they doing on Thunder Junction? Right? And it feels to me like there were two lists created for this set by One of them was by Creative, who was like picking out characters that made a lot of sense as like people who would want to leave their home plane and start a new life for whatever reason. And like, we have characters like, you know, Rutstein. Rutstein makes a ton of sense. Like, yeah, I mean, like, you can be a criminal in Innistrad where you might get eaten by a werewolf at any time, or you could go be, sorry, a legitimate business person on Thunder Junction, where as far as I can tell, there are no werewolves, right? Easy upgrade in your life. Someone like Geared, who never fit in on Ravnica, makes a lot of sense going to Thunder Junction because, like, first of all, it's a very, like, open, fresh world. There's a lot of wildlife. Seems like the kind of place Geared would want to be. Makes so much sense. Even someone like Olivia, I feel, fits into the world because, like, yeah, she had her wedding got totally, like, ruined by a bunch of planeswalkers. No one on Innistrad is really a big fan of her right now. She was doing some pretty, I would say nasty stuff, but I don't think nasty is the correct word. Dastardly things on Innistrad. So, like, portal opens up and you're like, well, I could go start a new life somewhere. Like, she's already lived for hundreds of years, might as well go live for hundreds of more in a new location. Then there's like characters.
Crit. She's over 6,000 years old.
Oh god, I forgot
she is one of the original vampire progenitors.
I forgot how long ago that was in world. Yeah, no, even then at that point, it's like, yeah, it's 6,000 years. Go try out a new plane for a little while. Do something fresh. But there are characters who I have to, like, agree with people just do not really fit. And I feel like their explanation was, like, absolutely someone was looking at a list of popular legendary creature cards and was like, which creatures are we not going to see anytime in the near future? And, like, can they get a new card on Thunder Junction? And so, like, that's why it feels like we have people like the biggest one, of course, everyone was talking about on the interwebs was Marchesa. It's like, why is she here? She's a queen. She has like a whole royal situation. And you can find a reason, like you can make a reason for her to be on Thunder Junction. But like, I feel like you have to work really hard when the answer should be really easy. You know, like, it seems like someone said she was going to be here and then they have to figure out a reason why, rather than finding a character and being like, would this character go to Thunder Junction? Yes or no. And then like Crom makes so little sense being here that they had to give him a reason to be here in flavor text. So like, shout out to flavor text writers for making that character make sense, because without that flavor text, I would have no idea why this creature was on Thunder Junction. Well, it just makes no sense.
It's obviously because they wanted all the partner commanders from the Commander Legends to be on the set so they could be like, howdy, partner.
I am going to quit. I'm... Brian? Yeah. I am so angry.
I'm angry because we didn't think of a howdy partner joke for Crown when we were working on the set. That would have been very clever.
All right, my rant is done. I have nothing else to say.
I mean, I totally agree with you about certain ones, like especially Marchesa. Like, I get people in power, positions of power, wanting to establish themselves on different planes so that, you know, they have connections to that plane, but I feel like as a person with a much embroiled political situation like Marchesa, I definitely think that's something that I would have expected her to send a liaison for to do that instead of her personally like making that trip and leaving her throne unattended. I mean, we don't really know what's going on in Fjord, but I definitely get the argument.
The most insulting one to me is honestly the Gitrog. The Gitrog monster is an Innistrad creature. Like, it is a part, it feels primordially associated with Innistrad, and to put it here just to make a bucking bronco joke, which is funny, don't get me wrong, giant frog with a saddle on it, very fun, it just feels like there is absolutely no respect being paid to the character and all of the respect is being paid to, like, the history of the character as kind of a meme, you know?
I think, like, on Innistrad itself, like, it doesn't have an established, like, worship to power conversion system like Theros does, potentially. So I don't think that I don't think that it's tethered to Innistrad like I would expect the gods from Theros to be. So it would not surprise me at all to see this wild monster who has been awakened after the Eldrazi invasion just start running rampant and then find itself randomly in front of some portal in it, not understand, and just rampage through the portal, right? Like, I'm not really as upset about that one as I am with Marchesa, or even, like, Lazav, but, you know, Lazav or Rakdos, but, like, those two, like, Lazav, I get the most just because he's blatantly doing, like, this is his chance to be off Ravnica, and I would not see him pass that opportunity up, especially since no one really knows when he's around anyway, so no one will miss him. Rakdos is kind of like, we kind of had that he was sleeping storyline and then didn't really get a whole lot of payoff for that, and now he's here. But I'm not as upset about the Gitrog monster being here.
Yeah, my thing with Rakdos and Lazav is that they both also had cards in the previous set, Murders at Karlov Manor, and, like, I don't understand why. Because Rakdos's only purpose in that set was to be asleep and to be the target, you know, the suspect. There we go. The literal mechanic in the set. The suspect of Judith's accusations. And so, like, he spends literally the entire story asleep. He does nothing, but he has a card. And Lazav is literally claimed to be dead. We saw him explode. He can't be here, surely. And we get a wink that, aha, but we don't all believe this, do we? And that's it. Yet he somehow still has a card in the set as a detective, so despite both characters also showing up here. And, like, I get that in, like, somewhere in the, like, I just think about how effective Lazav's card here would have been if he didn't have a card in MKM. We have this whole plot about, oh, he's dead, wink, wink, and then he shows up in Thunder Junction on a card. I think that would be just so effective. And it feels way less effective if he just also had a card in that set. And same with Rakdos. Like, that felt weird to me.
There is absolutely a world in the story where Agris Kos goes to, you know, investigate Rakdos and finds out Rakdos isn't there. And then, like, that becomes a big mystery, and that's why Judith locks Agris away, you know, like,
sure.
That's a great story point. Or, like, Lazav, it, you know, is, like, assumed dead, and we have that line at the end, like, oh, you know, we both know he's not dead, and then turns out he's on Thunder Junction. Like, those would have been really good uses for the characters and also the story. And
I think it's more because it's a Ravnica set and they want all the guild leaders represented in some form or fashion.
They didn't have all the guild leaders represented in some form or fashion, though. Like, we had six of them on cards, I think.
We didn't have anyone from the Gruul.
We did not have a Borborygmos card. We did not have a Rao card. We did not have a We did have a Vanifar card, right?
Yes.
I forget who else we didn't have. Anyway. Well, we didn't have all the guild leaders represented in MKM. And also, it's not a guild set. So, like, if it's not a guild set, then we don't need those characters here. And, like, it was just weird. And I think it would have been more effective if they didn't have cards. Both have cards in the last previous set. But anyway, I think that's enough on returning characters. We could probably talk about this for 4 hours. A couple other legends in the set. So Akul the Unrepentant is kind of the main villain of the set. Well, I guess Oko is also the main villain, but also the protagonist. Yeah, but also maybe the next character on this list is the main villain. But there are a lot of antagonists in the set, which is kind of the point. Akul is a scorpion dragon, but he's also not from Thunder Junction. Via Roy on Twitter, we learn he is from the plane of Gastal. Raise your hand if you know about the plane of Gastal.
I'm raising my hand because I know, but only because Roy mentioned it and I had to look it up.
Gastal is just like an abandoned wasteland plane. I think is this the plane where Manitarka gets exploded?
I think so.
It is just a plane that Urza visits in the Planeswalker novel. That apparently that's where Akul's from. So cool fun fact about that character.
We did get a card for Jace called Jace Reawakened, which has some really, really sick art showing like half Jace, half Ashiok. Just gorgeous. There's two different versions of the art. One's by Chris Ron. One is by Christy Balanescu.
Is it? Gorgeous. I'm pretty sure it's Chris Rollis.
Rollis. Sorry. Yeah. The R names. Anyways, really cool art, really cool card. My favorite thing about this is that there are only three actual 2-mana Planeswalker cards that are not like flip cards or something of that sort, or that don't like technically Nissa from Amonkhet is a 2-mana Planeswalker, but if you don't pay any extra mana, you get a 0 loyal. It just, she just dies immediately. So she's not, you can't cast her for 2 mana and like do anything. But there are three of them. One of them has broken formats in Renin 6. The other one was Tybalt, and now there's Jace Reawakened. So, like, Jace has a lot of room in his card. He's going to tip the scales either way when it comes to 2-mana Planeswalkers. Either they're incredible, and we have 2 incredible Planeswalkers, or they're awful, and we have 2 terrible 2-mana Planeswalkers. So I think that's fun. He's like a little balancing act. But also, I think it's just really cool. He's a really fun card. He costs 2 mana, but you technically can't cast him during your first, second, or third turns of the game. Uses the set mechanic. The real interesting thing about Jace in this form is that, at least from a fun card perspective, is that technically his card comes after the basic lands, or like right before the basic lands in the set, because he was supposed to be in the Aftermath style set, the epilogue set for Outlaws of Thunder Junction, and they shoved him into the main set and they couldn't put him into the normal order of cards, so he just got stuck on the end. I find that really funny.
But in the big score we do get Loot, the Key to Everything, and Omen Path Journey. And I wanted to mention Loot because his alternate art, I think, is really adorable because it shows Jason Braska as well, even on Loot's creature card. And then Omen Path Journey shows all three of them, too. They're going to... Loot can see the multiverse. Like, inside his brain is, like, a map of the Omen Paths and the multiverse and stuff. And that's weird. That's really weird. And I think his card is just, like, weird. I don't think his card is good. But I think it's, like, this neat... I think both Loot and Omen Path Journey are not great cards that have really flavorful designs about just, like, Loot represents not just, like, the literal representation of the multiversal map, but also, for Jason Braska, is this kind of representation of, like, raw unknown potential that, like, everything Jason Braska want to do. And if you want to learn more about what they want to do, go listen to last week's episode where we talk about the epilogue stories. Loot is just kind of like the key to everything is a great epithet here as like everything Jason Vraska want to do to make the multiverse a better place starts with this furry little beast kid. And why is he a beast noble? I don't even know that answer. I'm very curious to learn more.
He's the son of the previous guild pact and a captain and guild master. Of course he's a noble.
That's true.
He's adopted. But like, I guess adoption doesn't necessarily stop.
Yeah. No, adoption is a big part of hereditary nobility. So like,
yeah. Yeah, no, I was just like, well, but he's not the bloodline, but I guess that doesn't really matter because Jace became guild pact with he solved a maze.
He's part of the noble class.
Jace would not be a noble, though. He's a wizard. Anyway, I just think his card's neat and his abilities are really flavorful. All right, we're going to pick up the pace.
Yeah, we got some jokes. Fun cards. Funny cards. Hey. Cow jokes. Tell us some cow jokes.
Cowboy set. Holy cow. It's a cow angel. Based on the exclamatory phrase, holy cow. Bovine intervention. A mimic of the card divine intervention. The phrase divine intervention. Steer clear. Steer is a kind of cow. And also the flavor text on Hellspur Brute, who is a minotaur mercenary. Flavor text says the last fool who called him cowboy earned a free ride to the bottom of Black Snag Bog. We workshopped a lot of cowboy jokes for this card because I knew like we wanted one card in the set that was there's a couple minotaur in the set and we wanted one card with a cowboy joke because minotaurs are literally cowboys. I'm glad we got one in the set, because I think that's funny.
Yeah. I do want to say, for Holy Cow, it has some incredible flavor text. After it passed by, the rancher swore she saw hope shining in the pig's eyes.
Yeah.
Great flavor text, I believe, claimed by writer Dan Sheehan, who is incredible.
Dan was a delight to work with. I would love to work with Dan on another set. He is best known for his comedy writing on Twitter and in his books. But getting to work with him and see like the absolute breadth of quality he brings to all kinds of tones and stuff is really wonderful. Dan is great. Some world building things. We meet the Ateen in this set who are nomadic culture from an unknown plane. And so we get some flavor text that talks about that. So the flavor text on Gem Lightfoot Sky Explorer says, the nomadic Ateen rarely settle anywhere for more than a few seasons, but Jen never lets that stop her from seeing every last corner. And so this establishes that the Ateen are nomadic, they are constantly traveling. Kind of in this post-Omen Path world, this is expanded beyond their plane. And then on the flavor text of Patient Naturalist, the Ateen delight in delving into the unique wonders of each world they visit, which is a little bit of information about what the Ateen have been doing since the Omen Pass have opened up. And it's like appreciating a lot of the diversity of the multiverse, that different planes have different exciting things about them, and they really like getting to explore that and getting to learn about what makes each plane cool and neat and unique, and then taking that knowledge to other planes. There's a bunch of Ateen characters in this set. Wily Duke is one, Annie Flash is one, I think Stella Lee is also one.
Yep.
Legends wise, the face card of the it commander deck. There's a bunch of Ateen cards in the set. They are kind of the Magic's adaptation of indigenous American, I think specifically the Diné. Having them in this world is an obvious inclusion. And because of their nomadic nature, I really hope we see them elsewhere in other contexts. hello, any StudiX people who might be listening to this podcast, please, please put the Ateen more places. I think you've created a very cool culture that does a very cool thing in this world building with the Omen Paths, and I would love to see that explored more.
I love the idea of them as a nomadic people on their home plane who wandered their home plane and were nomadic, which is a really, like, honestly, a very complex lifestyle. And it's a thing that, you know, a lot of people on in our real world have, like, researched and things like that. And then, like, opening up portals to all these other different planes. And they were just like, sure, let's go check those out. You know, like, let's keep, like, you know, exploring the worlds. Yeah.
Like, I just hope this means that we're going to see them, like, on every plane. Like, from here on out, everywhere there's an open path, I expect to see at least one Ateen, and, like, they better keep it coming.
Flavor text on Quick Draw. The opening of the Omen Paths awoke the wild magic of Thunder Junction. Settlers dubbed it Thunder and put it to use in everything from farming tools to deadly weapons. So the Thunder in Thunder Junction refers to the specific, like, the world-specific magic. You see it in a ton of these cards. It's called Thunder. It is powerful. It is erratic. It is dynamic. It is exciting. And it was dormant for a really long time until the Omen Paths opened up and people started, moving to Thunder Junction. And the magic of the land itself awoke. And so the plane itself was kind of sleeping for a long time, other than this Fomori vault that was there. The plane is now, like, much more dynamic than it used to be. I'm glad this flavor text got here, because without the Planeswalker's Guide, I don't think Thunder would have been explained anywhere. But it is a specific kind of magic.
So, speaking of the plane awakening and people coming to the plane, there's a few cards that really highlight the fact this plane was sort of talked up as, like, oh, this is where all the open paths come together, and you're going to see influencers from all over the multiverse. And while I think, like, that could have been done a little bit more intensely, I also understand that, like, they don't have 800 people working at Wizards of the Coast in their creative department. So it's, you know, there's a limited scope. But a couple of the fun cards are, like, Discerning Peddler, which is a person selling goods in a stall, probably an Omen port. And the flavor text says, can I interest you in some herbs from Noctemoon, fresh from the Omen Path, or a set of Fiorin cookware, finest in the multiverse? So it's, you know, highlighting, like, hey, here's a place in the multiverse where you can go and pick up these items from all over the multiverse. And I think that's really neat. And it adds a lot of the flavor and texture to Thunder Junction by, like, pointing out, like, this is a place where all these different people come together, and some of them are just being honest merchants.
Yeah. a big part of what makes Thunder Junction unique in the multiverse is that it's a massive melting pot of immigrant diaspora communities, who are now intermingling. That is one of the cards that gets to show that off. I wish we got to do a little bit more of that, but, fingers crossed for Thunder Junction 2.
limited amount of space, limited amount of time, limited amount of people to make, like, a huge set of magic that covers all that. We've talked about this in the podcast a little bit, but the card Smuggler's Surprise shows, talking about bringing things from other planes. This card shows what is apparently some people from Theros, some Therans, who brought or built here a Trojan horse and are using it. Because guess what? On Theros, everyone knows that when someone gives you a giant wooden horse, there's a trap. But on Thunder Junction, they don't know any better. So you get to do a little bit of Smuggler Surprise. So,
I love that card.
It's so cute. Also, in the commander decks, I just wanted to point this out to people who may not have noticed it. There's two angel cards, Angel of Indemnity and Angelic Sellsword. These are two angels from Zendikar and New Capenna, respectively, who are on Thunder Junction being angels on Thunder Junction. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, like, it's just, mm-hmm. it's neat. It's neat to see these very specific plane expressions of angels, having both of them show up on this plane.
Yeah, this is another point where you just get, like, a strong payoff for having, like, strong visual motifs on all the other planes, is that when we're on Thunder Junction, you can look at an angel and know where it's from a lot of the time. These two specifically are just a little treat for, like, the nerds like us who care about that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in this set. Like, we can't go through and talk about every single time, but, like,
yeah,
a lot of the, like, creatures and the humans, even the people, you can look at them and be like, oh, you're from this plane. Like, there's Stoic Sphinx, who is just another Theron Sphinx, but is on Thunder Junction. Mm-hmm. I think that's fun.
The last thing it's not on the agenda. If there's an animal in this set, just like a regular animal card, it's probably a real actual animal from the American Southwest. We have coral snakes, Gila monsters, porcupines, beavers, bald eagles. There's a bald eagle griffin. Even the Felidar is a mountain lion, bighorn sheep crossover thing.
There's also a wolverine. I don't know. Are there wolverines in the American West?
Not anymore. Maybe. I did try to look that up. I don't know if historically they would have been up in, like, the Rockies, but I would believe it. Because, like, someone tried to get me on Twitter, like, beavers in the Southwest, and I'm like, the Southwest is full. It's not like rolling dunes of the Sahara Desert. It's mostly scrubland desert and also tons of mountains. I need people to understand that the Rocky Mountains are part of this.
All right,
And there's 100% beavers up there.
As a quick note before we move on, because we need to move on, Wikipedia says wolverines were once recorded as also being present in Colorado, areas of the southwestern okay. United States, including Arizona and great. New Mexico, and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah,
100% then, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Western tropes. I'm going to go through these fast. High Noon, that's when you duel. This is the dueling card. You only cast one spell a turn. Lively Dirge, the flavor text. Now rip your partner from the grave and form an undead killing wave. This was written specifically to mimic barn dance calling as a Southern American pastime. It was a fun one. Unfortunate accident, tied to the tracks. Historically, not from the Western genre specifically, not from movies. There were some plays and stories about it in the 1800s. And then it got really popularized in some Western media. Western the genre, not Western the political sphere. Media in the 20s, but I think is best known from the Dudley Do-Right shorts from Rocky and Bullwinkle, and he's Canadian, so I don't know. Caught in the crossfire, like the big town shootout across the main town, is like a thing that happens in Western stories. Great Train Heist, named after the Great Train Robbery, which was a short story, which I think then was also a play. And then an early American film made by Edison's company. It's not the first Western film. It's not the most famous Western film. It's not the most influential Western film until, like, later. It's kind of a footnote in history until someone erroneously decides it's really important. And then a whole bunch of things reference the Great Train Robbery. It's not even, like, in terms of the construction and inventions of filmic language, groundbreaking in any way. But it's not bad. Betrayal of the Vault, the Mexican standoff, as it got described around the time of the Mexican-American War, is when you have, like, three or more factions all pointing guns at each other. This happens at the end of the story. So we have Oko, Kellen, and Braska all on now three sides of this. This is also kind of a very specific Good, the Bad, and the Ugly reference, which happens in that film. Bruce Lee Bill Spine Sower is our Johnny Appleseed card. Johnny Appleseed was a real guy who went around planting apple trees and that's kind of the tall tale version of him, is that like he wore a pot on his head and planted apple trees. And I don't know much about the real history. It's probably like really seedy, haha, pun intended. Anyway, that's a card. Gold Rush and Gold Pan. The Gold Rush was just a real thing that happened. Boom towns are a thing that existed. Towns just like exploded in population over a year or two as people searched for gold. And so there's some reference to that here, largely in California and other places in the Southwest. Form a posse. Sorry, I skipped one. Bunny Paul Clearcutter. Paul Bunyan is kind of more an up north thing, but he's a giant lumberjack who has a big blue ox named Babe. Bonnie Paul's ox is named Bo. Form a posse. The cowboy posse, or the outlaw posse. Posse is a word that didn't get used in cowboy references until films, so it's not like a real word that real cowboys used, but Hollywood applied the word posse, meaning a group of dudes, to westerns, and it's kind of been a trope-based word since. Lava spur boots are cowboy, magical cowboy boots. Creosote heath. Creosote bush is a unique plant to the American Southwest. And I learned there is a clonal colony of creosote bushes called King Clone that are over 11,000 years old. So fun fact, I think that's really cool.
That's older than Olivia.
Correct. Lonely Arroyo is a card in the set. Arroyo is a specific type of geological formation where a young and winding river carves some steep sides in a low basin, not like a canyon, but you know, like in the card art. And this is a specific thing that happens all over the American Southwest, so that's just another kind of local term, some jargony term. Also, bucolic ranch. Bucolic is a word that's kind of used like pastoral, but in the specific context of like ranches and farming and kind of southern wilderness feel. So that's kind of the western version of pastoral. And then bounty board is the one, you know, classic western wanted posters. Boom, done. Western tropes. Good section.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some cartoons though. That's more fun.
Yeah.
I love the fact that we got Cunning Coyote and Resilient Roadrunner. Uh-huh. Speedy, or like I'm sad we didn't get a Speedy Gonzalez analog, but I get it. but the Acme Coyote and like the Beep Beep Roadrunner is just love it, and I love how their cars interact. It's wonderful.
Yeah, yep. I think it's very cute.
I think it would be really cool if Warner Brothers made a Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner movie.
You know, it would be really fun if it was like a courtroom drama.
Oh, God. Final thought territory is where we're getting. Yeah.
they also made a card called Shoot the Sheriff, which is like also kind of a Western theme, but I think is mostly a reference to the song.
The Bob Marley song.
It has the flavor text. No, where is that deputy?
Yeah, yeah. In Thunder Junction, you get to also shoot the deputy.
If you can find him anyway.
Yeah. This card also has incredible reminder text. You know, it says destroy target non-outlaw creature. And it says assassins, mercenaries, pirates, rogues, and warlocks are outlaws. Everyone else is fair game. Love it. Great.
Thank you, Matt Tayback.
Thank you, Matt Tayback. Yes.
And failed fording is with the flavor text. We should have taken the blasted ferry, Hope Hagen Prospector. This is a reference to the Oregon Trail video game series, where you can fail to ford a river and lose a bunch of your supplies as your wagon gets flooded. And it's much safer to take the ferry, but that costs money. Okay, there's some big stuff at the end here.
Yeah, so there's three cards from Big, and we can go through this pretty quickly, but I do want to talk about them because I think they're interesting. I want to talk about Ultek Matter Weaver. It is okay. So one thing about the Big score that's really confusing is that it is set on Thunder Junction, but it's also kind of an aftermath, like epilogue set. I don't know if Ultek Matter Weaver is on Thunder Junction, but I do want to mention it because it is the Ultek. Back in Lost Caverns of Ixalan had a connection to the Fomori, And this one is shown using what looks to be some Fomori technology and making some gnomes. Think it's just good to keep that in mind.
One of the things the Big Score was going to do was show us looks at the other sets from the past year in the same way that Aftermath did after March of the Machine. A lot of those cards got cut when the set was trimmed down and adapted into this format. This, and there's a hat, I think. There's an equipment hat in blue that I think are the only real cards from Ixalan that survived this. But most of the other cards are set on Thunder Junction.
Yep.
Like Torpor Orb.
Torpor Orb, which I just wanted to bring up because it has this flavor text. It's a reprint, so it's an old card. Flavor text says, "Devour the hope of a world and it will bow before you. Fomori inscription." I'm sure they're good. I'm sure the Fomori are nice. I'm sure they're very pleasant, friendly people. Nah. Definitely nothing sinister going on here. Definitely should not look into the fact that their transmutation font is just gushing blood from a mouth. You know, it's fine. They're good, nice people. I'm sure Lute is going to be a very, very calm and peaceful child. And then this card, which had a lot of people going, what the heck? What is that? Pest Control. Fun card. Is that in the main set or the commander set? Where is Pest Control?
It's in the Big Score.
It's in the Big Score? Okay, yeah. Pest Control. This card, very fun, shows a repurposing of what looks to be some new Phyrexian tech. Just what it looks like to me. It looks like an Elish Norn style spire that is being used to kill a bunch of varmints. I feel like, you know, if there's a giant multiplanar invasion and they leave some of their little tech parts around, and if you use them, you use them, you know, good for you.
There is a card in Aftermath. It's an Eldraine Knight, I think, that is using a piece of Phyrexian as like knight armor. So wouldn't be unheard of. I don't know if that's specifically what Pest Control is, but
it looks really, really like it is something from Elish Norn's faction of Phyrexia. You get a better look at it on the like alt art frame where you see like the red sinew and like the alabaster sort of porcelain coverings. Whatever it is, it's very effective at making people who play tokens very upset.
Like me. Very sad.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They just keep printing cards to kick elves into the ground.
Makes me very, very sad.
I don't know what they have against elves. I'm sorry.
All right, that's Flavor Gems of Thunder Junction. See, this is what happens when we have an unscripted section where we just talk, unbound by the laws of our agenda. We end up with long episodes. Anyway, I'm going to say, in lieu of time, I'm going to issue a final thought.
My final thought is just that I can't stop thinking about that howdy partner joke. I'm sorry. I really thought about closing out our Discord and just, y'all were going to have to find someone else to edit this. God.
You're welcome. My final thought is that, Delicious in Dungeon is great. And can't wait to watch it this week's episode after I get off this podcast.
I need everyone to watch Dungeon Meshi. If you have not watched it yet, you have time. It's on Netflix to catch up for next week's episode.
This week's episode.
The episode that is going to air on April 25th. Be caught up by then, please. Because you're gonna wanna be caught up by the 25th. See, you've tricked me into a final thought. Patreon.com/TheVorthosCast. You can give us money to keep the show running. You also get on our Discord where Vorthos is like you hang out and it's fun. Yay.
Leave us a review.
What?
We haven't asked people for reviews on like iTunes and stuff in a while. So like if you like our show, leave us a review on iTunes or whatever.
And tell your friends.
Yeah. More listeners.
And be mad at Google that they shut down their podcast thingy.
Yeah. Be mad at Google. Just be mad at Google.
Just be mad at Google. Yeah, forget everything else we said for the last hour. Your takeaway from this podcast is be mad at Google for having bad products.
And bad politics.
We're not sponsored by Google, so this is okay to say.
We're not sponsored by anyone except for our patrons at patreon.com/thevorthoscast.
And we love them, and we love everyone out there, so thank you for listening. This has been The Vorthos Cast.